Good evening, friends. Franz Weinschenk, your host on Valley Writers Read, here to welcome you to another edition of a program where only authors from right here in the San Joaquin Valley get to read their literary prose. And tonight, our writer-reader is Jim Bonelli, a retired airline pilot who lives up in Aubrey. Jim is going to read a really delightful story of his entitled The Wonderful World of Accounting. Here he is, Jim Bonelli, The Wonderful World of Accounting.
I keep hearing you're concerned about my happiness, but all the thought you're giving me is conscience, I guess. If I were walking in your shoes, I wouldn't worry none. Are you no friends, a word about me, I'm having lots of fun. Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. Don't tell me I've nothing to do.
Henry Smith, CPA, was a very simple, ordinary man. He was an accountant, a numbers man. He displayed about as much personal charm as a Chevy Nova. His skin was pale white. His hair was gray, thin, and sparse. His rimless glasses rested crookedly on his skinny nose. He lived in a world of black and white where all columns balanced at the bottom of the page. His personality read zero on a scale of 1 to 10. Henry was only one step beyond the green eyeshade generation, and he proudly displayed his pocket protector to keep ink and pencil smudges off his shirt. He would wear the same shirt and tie every day, unless his fat wife, Martha, intervened. Middle age was not treating Henry kindly. His work was no longer challenging, and he was getting fat and flabby. But that was not his biggest problem. His mind was depreciating, and he knew it. He could not work at his desk. His eyes were drawn constantly toward the window. What was going on out there? He had to know. Now, as of lately, maybe the last few weeks or so, he was beginning to hear voices talking to him. They weren't other people's voices that he heard. They were his own voice speaking to him. It was his brain speaking. He had suffered migraine headaches for years, but this was something new in the last few weeks. It was probably due to too much stress. After all, it was tax time. Perhaps you should talk this new problem over with Martha, the voice said. No, no way. She doesn't understand me anyway. She never did. 25 years, she never understood me. He heard that voice so often that now he called it Hank. What did you say, Henry? Martha said over the breakfast table without even looking up from the paper. Oh, nothing. I was just mumbling to myself again, I guess. Goodbye, Martha. You must stop doing that, Henry. I told you not to do that yesterday, don't you remember? I told you to stop that. He gave her the required peck on the cheek as he picked up the brown bag containing his lunch. It was the usual, a peanut butter sandwich and an apple. Out the door he went. Another boring day at the office, or so it appeared, but he did not go to his office. Martha had said that he was no fun anymore. She said he should take up golf. Henry hated golf. He tried it and he hated it. It was much too hot out there, and the trees and the flowers made him sneeze. He preferred the indoors with cool air conditioning and clean air. His partners at his accounting firm had noticed Henry's changes, too. They had urged him to take more time off, go for a vacation. They told him he should enjoy life more, get out and have fun. Life should not be all hard work, and somebody else can handle Henry's clients. The workload had slacked off considerably as of late, and he could care less. He was not interested in money. It never meant much to Henry. He and Martha did take a vacation last year, just after the tax season was over. That is the busiest time of the year for accountants, you know. They took a 5-day carnival cruise to Mexico. That cruise was absolutely no fun for Henry. All he wanted to do was sit in his cabin and read. That was his favorite way of escaping. But Martha wanted him to take square dance lessons. He hated it. She joined a yoga class and had a great time. Good riddance, he thought. It got her out of his hair for a while. That 5-day cruise seemed to take forever. He thought it would never end. And no, he did not want to leave the boat to go souvenir shopping in Mazatlan. Martha went with the other ladies, and he enjoyed the peace and solitude while they were gone. When she returned, she brought him a straw hat with the word Mexico stitched on the back in red yarn. It was ugly. He wanted to throw it overboard. Actually, he wanted to put that hat on Martha and throw them both overboard. But then Hank's voice said, "Forget it, Henry." He thought better of the idea and went back to reading. Sometimes his voices were good things. The headaches did seem to go away while they were on the cruise, and that was a welcome change. Even Hank's voice seemed to be quieter now. It was much less persistent than last week. Maybe just a whisper now and then, but he could ignore that. Maybe it would go away for good. At least he hoped so. That voice bothered him a lot. That 850-foot boat got extremely small after 3 days, and Henry was happy to get back home. He could sit in his bark lounger and read all night if that's what he wanted to do. The folks at the office seemed to be happy to have him back. They wanted to hear all about his trip. Henry didn't say much, said it was fine, but didn't go into any detail. He did not even mention the straw hat Martha had bought for him. He had a headache again. That was the first time that that had happened since last week. Henry sat at his desk and stared out the window overlooking a parking lot and the alley. The office walls seemed to close in on him. He decided to leave the office early because Hank told him to. "Arlene, I'm going to Lions Club today. It's Tuesday, you know," Henry said as he walked out into the blistering 100-degree Phoenix afternoon. Henry did not belong to the Tuesday Lions Club. He did not belong to any club because he hated clubs. He had joined the Young Accountants Society in college, but never returned after he was asked to say a few words about why he wanted to be an accountant. He tried the Accountants for Spiro Agnew Club, but dropped out when he found out that Spiro Agnew was a Greek. Henry had been raised a Roman Catholic, and he still carried a bit of a grudge. Henry was only working part-time now. He was taking more time off to try to regain his health. Oh, the headaches did occur sometimes on days away from the office, but they were not nearly as severe, and he only heard Hank's voice when he walked. Some days he would kiss Martha goodbye, drive his gray Nova over to Denny's for coffee, browse through the Fashion Park Mall where it was cool, and then drive over to the other side of town to visit his favorite thrift stores. He would call into the office and tell Arlene he was meeting a client, and then he would just disappear for the day. She knew he did not have any clients to meet, but she thanked him and said, "Have a good day, Henry." Henry did not need to buy clothes or anything else at thrift stores, but he liked the challenge of shopping where things were really cheap. He was relatively well off, financially speaking. He had a good balance sheet. The kids were out of the house and pretty much on their own. It was just him and Martha. In fact, that was the problem, just him and Martha. The thrift stores gave him a good place to escape. He was anonymous there. Nobody knew him, and he liked that feeling. He could buy anything he wanted. He could afford it. He could buy the whole darn store if he wanted to, but he just wanted to blend in with the other shoppers. Money was not an object with Henry, but he could not pass up a bargain. He liked used books and neckties. Once he bought a framed picture of a little girl holding a kitten. The little girl and the kitten had huge dark eyes that bulged out. Martha hung it in the garage, and 2 days later it went away. Just disappeared. Gone. Wednesday was Henry's day to go to Goodwill, because that is the day that the new merchandise arrived. And you never know just what is going to be there until you look, and that is the challenge. The smell of Goodwill was always relaxing to Henry. It was, in his opinion, much more relaxing than even sea air. Used clothing, tennis shoes, old books, all combined to form some sort of a musty smell, like an aromatherapy. It was a comfortable, restful smell. To him, it was thrift aroma. Fat women with sniffling kids just added to the colorful scene. He loved it. Veterans Thrift received their new stuff on Thursday and Salvation Army on Friday. He would check them out, too. Often, he would see the same people that he saw at Veterans Thrift or Salvation Army. There was this one old guy who bought old bicycles and rusty lawnmowers to fix up and sell. There were always fat women who would hold up a dress and look in the mirror to see if it made them look any fatter. There were no models or displays, and good marketing had been completely avoided. The clothes were dull, and the shoppers were even duller. Today was going to be just like any other day here at Goodwill. Henry picked up a couple of books and was heading to the checkout when he noticed a beautiful lady. She was different than any other woman in the store. And in fact, she was more beautiful than any woman he had ever seen in a thrift store. She was tall, thin, athletic, and tan. She was a class act from head to toe. A slight smile crossed her lips as the sales lady offered, "Buenos dias, señora." She acknowledged the salutation with a nod and a quick, "Gracias." Henry tried not to stare, but her thin smile revealed her teeth, sparkling white as pearls. Her perfect teeth offered gorgeous contrast to her olive-skinned face. What a lovely face it was, accented by emerald green eyes. This lady's clothes were outstanding. They were definitely not thrift store merchandise, and they were much too classy for this godforsaken town. She carried a small pink leather purse, instantly recognizable as being from Coach. A gold monogram decorated the front with the initials IDF. Her pale blue and white striped blouse covered her small chest, and white slacks adorned her long, thin legs. Her Sperry topsiders looked strangely out of character in Phoenix. Henry felt that he should know her. He didn't know how or where, but maybe they had met somewhere before. Was she a client or a client's wife? Or was she another accountant that he had met at a conference? He couldn't think. His headache was back, and Hank's voice in his head mumbled something about touching her. He walked back to the book section and tried to accidentally bump into her, but she was soon gone. Henry took his books to the checkout line and managed to get in just behind her in line. He stood close, but she ignored him. He recognized her cologne as white linen, and he breathed in deep breaths of the wonderful scent. "It sure is hot outside, isn't it?" he said, using his clumsy best attempt to strike up a conversation. Sweat was dripping from his armpits. He could feel it running down his sides, and his shirt was dampened with perspiration. He was never very good at talking to women, let alone a beauty like her. She smiled in response and whispered, "Si." She turned away, avoiding his charm. He stared into her emerald green eyes. His eyes followed her every graceful step as she paid for a small cut glass vase and breezed out the door. She never once looked back. Henry drove slowly from the parking lot, giving the Chevy Nova's air conditioner time to cool him down. Just as he entered the main street, he caught a glimpse of a white Jaguar turning left and disappearing into traffic. Sweat was rolling down his arms and legs. His headache was back, and Hank's voice was talking to him, but he could not understand the words. Maybe a beer would cool him off, so he headed over to Lefty's by the mall. A tall cold glass was soon sitting on the bar in front of him. He didn't remember ordering it. It just appeared by magic. Condensation ran down the side of the glass like sweat from his arms. He took a long, cool sip, a wonderful sip, and wiped the foam from his lips, and he opened one of the paperbacks he had just bought for 25 cents. The Nantucket Diet Murders. That sounds interesting, he thought. He had never been to Nantucket, and he didn't know much about New England. But living in Phoenix, he had spent many hours daydreaming about sailing vessels and the sounds and the smell of the sea. Henry hated Phoenix. He always had. He would like a cooler climate. This 105-degree heat every day can drive a guy nuts. He read slowly in the dim light. The book was entertaining, and the air conditioning was starting to blow cool air on him and dry his damp shirt. The headache was better, but it had not completely subsided. The voice was quiet while he read. The book started out nicely. It painted a wonderful word picture of a quaint fishing village on a picture postcard perfect island with ancient giant oak trees dotting the hillsides and extending to the steep cliffs dropping down to the Atlantic Ocean. He read of the cool breezes off the sea. He loved it, and he read on. The story spoke of summer mansions, old money, classic wooden boats, and picnics with cheese and oysters and wine. His mind drifted as he dreamed of smelling the sea and hearing the breakers. He could see yachts and lobster boats riding at anchor and feel the ocean spray on his face. Another beer appeared on the bar. Henry snapped back to reality when he felt the air conditioner fanning the smell of stale beer around the room. Back to his book, and he let his mind escape. Now the line between reality and Henry's dream world was often blurred. Some days his mind wandered around the room and flew out the window and over the far horizons. Often Hank's voice would tell him to follow his dream and travel. Sometimes it would tell him to stay calm and get his work done. Today he felt relaxed and comfortable as he sipped his beer. He was oblivious of the world around him. He was intrigued with the book and its story, and so he read on. Henry was confident that he could tell the difference between fantasy and his real life, the life where he was an accountant with an office and a desk and a home, with a wife. Oh, yeah, a wife named Martha. Oh, yes, he could not escape that reality, no matter how much he let his mind travel. The Nantucket Diet Murders. It was sort of a chick book, but he found some escape from his boring life in books. The story was about a group of wealthy socialites from New York who summered in Nantucket. The ladies had visited an expensive spa to rejuvenate their wrinkling bodies and lose flab. Occasionally, their husbands would come to join them and stay for the last half of the summer. There were cocktail parties and movies in the village. Mysteriously, one by one, their rich husbands began to die off. Henry was intrigued, so he read on. The book described each woman in detail, slowly and in exquisite detail. Spa Italiano was the name of the very ritzy resort. and it was located in a lovely ornate mansion overlooking the Sound. No expense had been spared to compromise its wonderful elegance. Henry just kept reading. The spa was owned by a beautiful Italian countess, Signora Isabella del Fioria. The countess was tall, thin, and tanned, and athletic. He read on. Another beer arrived, although Henry didn't remember ordering it either. It was tall and cool and dripping with moisture running down the side of the glass, and it formed a puddle on the bar. He made it welcome. He licked the foam and thanked the server. He read on, slowly starting to pay more attention to the words. He was a fast reader and often skipped over a sentence now and then to speed things up and get to the plot faster. Today was the exception to Henry's reading. He read slowly and completely absorbed each word. He was actually cherishing each sentence, letting the author's meaning soak into his mind. Her thin smile revealed her perfect teeth as white as pearls, offering a gorgeous contrast to her olive-skinned face. The lovely face was accented by emerald green eyes. Henry could not believe what he was reading. His glass slipped out of his hands and crashed to the floor. He had just passed Countess Isabella del Fioria. It had to be her. Even the words he formed in his mind were the same words used by this author. Henry dawdled on his way home. His mind was racing, but his car was driving slowly. He was tying up traffic. Other drivers honked and flipped him the bird sign. Hank yelled at them to shut up. Henry walked into his house with his book under his arm. Sweat was dripping down his sleeves. His shirt was drenched, and he smelled like spilled beer. Martha was less than pleased with his appearance. She told him to sit down and eat dinner. The green leafy salad did nothing for his appetite. "What is the matter with you, Henry? Where did you get that book?" said the old bag. She looked at the oven clock as he walked straight to the table, forgetting to kiss her. He sat down and opened his book. "What are you reading, Henry?" she said. There was no answer. "I'm talking to you, Henry." Only silence greeted her. "Oh, sorry, dear, what did you say?" was his answer. "Put that darn book down and look at me when I talk to you," came her sweet voice from the other side of the table. "I ask you what you are reading." "The name of the book is The Nantucket Diet Murders," he meekly said, as if to hide pornography or something. The book had no hint of any pornography, and it was suitable for anybody. He wanted to read more about the Countess. His voice told him to smack his fist into the salad plate. He hated salad yesterday, and it looks even no better today. Hank's voice said so, too. "Shut up," whispered Henry. "What on the earth are you talking about, Henry?" "Oh, dear, I must have been reading out loud. I'm sorry, dear." Henry wasn't sorry at all. It just seemed to bubble out of his brain. He read on. Unencumbered and unashamed. Martha went out to tend to her garden and then slammed the door nearly off its hinges. "Thank you old wrinkled, fat, ugly scumbag," murmured Hank. Henry smiled and he read on. Then he moved to his bark lounger and he got comfortable and he kept reading. He was reading as fast as he could read, but being careful not to miss a single word. The book was written with beautiful prose and intricate, colorful descriptions of the people and the places. The plot was now beginning to develop, and it had absorbed him completely. Hank was quiet. Henry was reading faster and faster. The plot of the book intrigued him. There seemed to be some parallel to the victims in the Virginia Rich novel and some of the things going on in his life. It wasn't the wealthy husbands he identified with, but it was more about the symptoms of the illness they exhibited. First, it was Gussie's husband, Wilford, or Willie as he was known, a wealthy Wall Street stockbroker and a yachtsman. Willie was preceded by his reputation as quiet a ladies' man. A millionaire playboy would better describe Willie. In Willie's mind, he was still the handsome dude that graduated from Yale and took over his father's chair at the market. He had never quite settled down, even after he and Gussie married many years ago. Gussie and Willie certainly had many problems throughout their long marriage, but in the last few years, with thousands of dollars having been spent on counseling and countless hours and tons of money spent on shrinks, things seemed to be getting better now. He joined her at Nantucket, and soon after, he enrolled in the spa's fitness program for men. He had his yacht, the Tailwind, brought over from New York. What a great way to while away the summer days, enjoying the Countess's wonderful spa, getting in shape and enjoying the healthful diet salads with wonderful fresh greens grown in the estate's own gardens and prepared by their expert chef. The Countess had recruited Luigi in her native city of Rome and persuaded him to move to Nantucket. And before the first summer was over, they became an item for a short time. The Countess soon tired of the arrangement and gave Luigi the old heave-ho. He stayed at the spa as head chef and got a second job as bartender at the Scrimshaw, the local watering hole. This was the world-famous Scrimshaw, favored by visiting yachtsmen, celebrities, and hangers-on, as well as socialites. The tavern had been part of Nantucket's history since the captains of the whaling ships met with their investors to discuss future voyages. Seafarers had frequented the Shrimp for over 100 years. The Sunday brunch was to die for, with heaps of fresh seafood, exotic fruit flown in from the islands, and, of course, the famous Nantucket diet salad made from the garden. Martinis flowed like water for the men, and the women favored Mai Tais with little umbrellas floating on their tops. Willie started having headaches, and they were mild at first, but they increased in intensity, and soon they were rendering him unable to continue with his fitness program. The other fellows in the program became worried when he dropped out, and even stopped having his usual martini at the Scrim. Gussie dismissed his complaints at first. She thought he was just bored with the idle pace compared to the business world of New York. But when he started having hallucinations and hearing voices, she decided it was more serious and made arrangements to get him back to his doctor in New York. Later that afternoon, she found him on his yacht, dead. Nantucket's colorful history is rich with stories from the days when huge sailing fleets made the island their home port. History is said, at least it is said by historians, has a way of repeating itself. And later that very summer, another of the spa's wealthy clients' husbands became suddenly ill. The symptoms were very suspicious. J. Morgan Brown III, who had been married to Leona Brown for more than 30 years, first complained to her that his head ached. By the second day, he was so debilitated that he did not leave his bed. He dreamed that he saw the ghost of his grandmother and heard voices. By the third day, he was dead. Henry read on, faster and faster. He couldn't turn the pages fast enough. Martha called him to the dinner table. She had fixed him a nice green salad from her own garden. He came to the table, but he did not even lay down his book. He held it in one hand and dawdled with his food with the other hand. Hank spoke to him. "Don't eat the salad," he said, loud and clear. "Don't eat the salad, Henry." Both of the men in Nantucket had died unexpectedly. They were both millionaires. In both cases, the coroner, Johnny O'Grady, who was also the sheriff and had no medical training, had ruled the deaths as natural causes. The bodies were shipped to the mainland for funerals and burials. The cases began to raise eyebrows in the peaceful, wealthy enclave. The locals were very cliquish and had always viewed the spa as Italiano with a mixture of suspicion and envy. Not only were there glares and glances leveled at the beautiful spa on the hill, but also at the Countess Isabella del Fiore specifically. Willie and Morgan were later found to be secret investors in the Spa Italiano. The fact that both men were linked romantically and discreetly with the Countess gave the case more importance. When it was revealed that the second body was discovered in the Countess's bedroom at the spa, the mystery really took on huge new proportions. The community had never had anything like this, and it seemed like the scandal would soon spread to the mainland, unless the mystery of the sudden deaths could be discovered, and discovered quickly. Henry could not lay the book down. He read late into the night. His headache came back, and Hank was whispering in his ear. Gussie convinced her best friend, Leona, that an autopsy was necessary before her husband's body was buried. She was convinced that the two deaths were related and wished that she had insisted on an autopsy before Willie was buried. She felt that the two deaths were more than a coincidence. Their suspicions were confirmed a week later when Sheriff O'Grady called to tell them the cause of death was digitalis toxicity. He was ordering Willie's body exhumed. Furthermore, he was investigating both women as suspects in their husbands' deaths. They were to remain on the island under house arrest until the investigation was complete. Henry read on. Hank told him to finish the book tonight. He kept reading. He couldn't stop now. Henry wanted to know how the very beneficial drug could be used as a poison. He soon found out that as a prepared drug, digitalis has a very narrow therapeutic range. A beneficial dose is just one-third less than one which will cause toxicity. The danger increases in cases where a potassium deficiency and a reduced caloric intake occur. A perfect example is a person on a non-medical supervised diet and a person who is not given supplementary vitamins. All clues pointed to the Spa Italiano. Perhaps it was their special diet of health food salads that Isabella herself prepared with the bright green leafy vegetables from the spa's garden. Henry excused himself from the table. "You didn't eat your salad, dear," said the old battle axe at the dinner table. "I don't want any," was his straight-to-the-point answer. He retreated to his barca lounger and read late into the night. The spa was surrounded by extravagant gardens with beautiful fountains spraying water over their ornate marble structures. Quaint cobblestone pathways meandered through fragrant beds of blossoms and blooms. The entire garden was dripping with purple wisteria. Dozens of different roses, bright-colored bougainvillea, pink dianthus, cherry yellow dahlias, and tall, tall foxglove. This was a smoking gun, according to Sheriff O'Grady. He had the Countess arrested and eventually tried for the two murders. It was only through the uncanny, unrelenting, and untiring detective work of her friend Gussie that the defense was able to prove that the poison was slowly administered to the victims at the Scrimshaw and not at the spa. The victims all stopped by the Scrim, as it was well known, for drinks at the very popular cocktail hour. Further investigation led to the arrest of Luigi. and the district attorney was able to present a clear-cut case of the classic jealous lover. And all the charges against the countess were dismissed. It was proven beyond a doubt that she had no part in any conspiracy. Henry, after searching further into the effects of digitalis toxicity, realized that Martha's garden did in fact contain many foxglove plants. Upon careful examination, he felt that many of the leaves had been carefully removed from the plants. Life took an unexpected turn for Henry. Martha announced one morning out of a clear blue sky that she needed a little Martha time, a bit of time for herself. Henry didn't object. In fact, he thought it was a great idea. And as if that bit of welcome news was not enough, a few days later, one of his partners in the accounting firm called him aside for a private talk. He had a daughter who was just finishing her certified public accountant's license, and he would like to make a place for her. He asked Henry if he might be willing to sell his share. He made Henry an offer that he could not refuse. Henry could not believe his good fortunes. Two coming so close together. This was better than anything he had ever imagined. Today, there was no headache. Henry decided to go through a self-induced change of life. Call it menopause if you like, but whatever the term fits best is fine with Henry. That little bit of Martha time turned out to be longer than expected. It turned out to be more than Henry could have hoped for in his wildest dreams. She actually wanted a divorce. Henry reluctantly agreed, working hard to suppress smiles and giggles of joy. The next thing that had to go was a Chevy Nova. Henry hated it because it did nothing for his persona. It was definitely a debit in his new life. The Chevy dealer offered him $400 credit toward a 2-year-old Corvette convertible that was just traded in. It was too good a deal to pass up. It had depreciated to half its original price and only had 20,000 miles on it. It was red with a white top, perfect for a man of distinction like the new Henry. The last time Henry saw Phoenix was in the Corvette's rearview mirror. Nobody in Phoenix has seen him since. Oh, I did get a Christmas card from the old boy last year. It had no return address, but it included a phone number. I did not recognize the area code. It was not from any of the codes in Arizona. I was too busy to call, but I kept the card. It turned up on my desk yesterday. It had been buried in clutter. Curiosity could not hold me back, so I punched in the numbers. I could hear the ring on the other end. A soft voice answered. Spa Italiano, may I help you, please? A beautiful Italian accent. I would like to speak to Henry Smith. I'm an old friend of his, I said. Un momento, I'll connect you to Cost Accounting.
That's amore.
Bells will ring.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling.
And you sing Vita Bella.
Vita Bella, Vita Bella. Hearts will play.
Tippy-tippy-tay, tippy-tippy-tay.
Like a gay tarantella.
Lucky fella.
When the stars make you drool just like pasta fazzo. That's amore.
That's amore.
When you dance down the street with the club.
provided you feed your in love. When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see, back in old Napoli, that's amore.
Amore,
that's amore.
That was Jim Benelli reading The Wonderful World of Accounting. And so we get to meet Henry Smith, CPA, and his wife, Martha. More than anything else, Henry seems to be totally bored with his job, his wife, and his life in general. He and his wife thought that maybe going on a cruise might help, but if anything, it made things worse. It seems like all Henry wants to do is get himself out of the rut that he was in. First, he tried going to thrift shops. Then he started listening to Hank, his inner voice. And finally, he started reading a murder mystery all about the rich and famous and how wonderful life is all the way back there in Nantucket in Massachusetts. That's the kind of lifestyle he really wanted. So Martha and him get a divorce. He trades in his boring Nova for a Corvette convertible and heads out for New England. And the last time anybody from Arizona ever heard from him, he was working in cost accounting at the Spa Italiano in Nantucket, Massachusetts. Thank you, Jim Benelli, for that great story. Friends, as we mentioned earlier, Jim Benelli is a retired airline pilot who currently lives up in the foothills in the little town of Aubury. He recently published a book entitled Ski Tales, The History of China Peak and Sierra Summit. We certainly thank him for his contribution tonight and hope he's busy working on some more stories for us for next year. And so we come to the end of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read story again, just go online to kvpr.org and link up with Archived Audio. Next week, we'll be featuring one story written by two authors, Armin Bacon and Nancy Miller. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.